Hello and welcome to the Alligator Sports Podcast. This is the show for Tuesday, November 29th, 2011. I'm your host, Greg Luca, and I'm joined by two writers today who believe they can find the proper balance of family and, you know, health and coaching and podcasting. We have Matt Watts.
Praise the Lord. Hallelujah. Jack Del Rio is gone.
And we have Tom Green.
It's like Christmas in almost December for Watts.
Right. Right. Well, who knows? Christmas in December. It's such an outrageous thing to have. But, yeah, in today's show, we have a huge coaching move to talk about. It's really shaking up the nation, and everybody's talking about it. And it's been the talk all around Florida, and that is, of course, not Urban Meyer, of course. We're talking about Jack Del Rio, the big news that came out this morning. So if anybody's listened to any of the shows, you know that Wallace is not a huge fan of Jack Del Rio. He's the
He's
the first ever eight-time Will Hill Award recipient, I believe.
Other than Will Hill.
So why don't you just, go. The floor is yours.
I can't even put into words how ecstatic I am. It's really, to borrow a word from Wayne Weaver, it's a bittersweet day. I woke up, I chose a terrible day to sleep in, but when I did wake up, I had an overload of text messages informing me that the most glorious news of ever could ever be that Jack Del Rio had been fired. But then that news was tempered by some more humongous breaking news that Wayne Weaver was selling the team to Shad Khan, a owner of a...
Shaka Khan?
No, Shad Khan.
Oh.
Khan!
All right, I got you.
Hopefully he makes better decisions than the Minnesota Timberwolves Khan.
Right.
There's a lot of cons out there. Anyway, continue.
Pros and cons.
Yikes.
Go on.
No, yeah. So it's terrible. He says he's committed to Jacksonville and he doesn't want to move the team and all that. But as you'll come to find out in this episode of the podcast, I'm a dying cynic and I'm just frightened to death that my beloved Jacksonville Jaguars could one day be moved to another city. But back to Jack Del Rio being gone, that's amazing. It's a day that's been long overdue. He's been the Jacksonville Jaguars coach for 9 years. He's got one playoff berth to show for it. He's made some of the worst coaching decisions I think I've ever seen on a football field.
Yikes.
On a high school level, not even a professional level. It's long overdue, and I'm just rejoicing. I think I'll wear a permanent smile with my number 11 Blaine Gabbert jersey.
I was going to say, busted out the Jaguars jersey today. It's a rare sight, actually. I don't think I've even seen this one. Hasn't been much for Gabbert fans to cheer about so far, but this is a good news for anybody involved in that organization, apparently. But yeah, like we said, moving on to, you know, coaching issues you might be a little bit more concerned with. You got the Urban Meyer thing that's been going on. Obviously, he accepted the job at Ohio State. We're going to talk about that decision, maybe some of the factors that went into that for him and the general reaction around these parts. And then we're going to get into some of this news that's kind of coming up lately with some people who might be leaving the program in terms of the Florida football team and just where we can see that going from here in terms of their coaching situation. And we'll talk a little bit about Charlie Weiss. We talk a little bit about the Florida State game, obviously. We got to get the recap of that in there because coming at you on a Tuesday, and normally it feels like so much has happened since then, but that was still only a couple days ago.
And we haven't even had media.
This is about our normal Tuesday showtime. So, yeah, we're going to get into all of that, and then we obviously going to try to weave some Gators in the NFL in there with our awards. So, long show today, but I think it'll be worth the listen. So, enjoy. Buckle up. All right, so we're going to start today's show talking about Urban Meyer with the shocking news yesterday that he's accepted an offer to become the head coach at Ohio State.
Ta-da!
6 years, $4 million a year. So, I mean, what was your guys' first reaction? This is something that's been in the works for a while, so it couldn't have come as that much of a surprise.
I don't think anybody that knows the name Urban Meyer, Florida Gators, and Ohio State was surprised by that announcement at all. At all. I'm sorry. This guy is the guy who had a clause in his contract at Utah to allow him to bolt for Ohio State whenever he wanted. This is the guy who has a picture of Woody Hayes in his basement, in his garage, whatever it is, his man cave. This is a guy who has been to, you know, countless upon countless Ohio State football games as a kid, waxes poetic about the history of Woody Hayes and Bo Schembechler. It's just not a surprise to me. It shouldn't be a surprise to anybody at all.
The thought of Urban Meyer having a man cave is just funny to me.
I mean, he must do something when he's not with his family.
Work?
I don't know. The family probably isn't allowed in the man cave, and that's probably got him real upset. But, yeah, Tom, did this take you by surprise at all?
Not at all.
And I feel the same way. I mean, I just think he's a guy who is a football coach at heart and is just can't get away from that as much as he may have wanted to or thought he needed to. And I guess that's where I stand on it. I think from a Florida perspective, the fans have no right to really be upset about this because I believe that when he retired last year, he thought that he had this kind of health concern and that he wouldn't be able to do this and that he needed to spend more time with his family. And now he's just realized that's not how it is and that's not how he feels and he wants to get back into it.
I think a lot of that is true, but I also can't rule out the fact that Florida's program is in complete shambles, and part of that has to do with Urban Meyer.
Well, I mean, what do you mean by it's in complete shambles? Like, he's been recruiting the guys that he wanted, and he still would have had a shot at another great recruiting class because he's Urban Meyer.
Like, recruited the players that he wanted that didn't pan out. I mean, look at the players that are on the field this year. Did they pan out to
you? So because a couple recruits didn't pan out? First of all, he didn't even know that at the time. Like, they had gone through one bad year, but you were gonna have two of the top quarterbacks coming in, and you thought you were going to have a great defense. The expectations for this team were still pretty high coming into the season. They were a team that were ranked in the top 25.
Yeah, there's also
top 10 at one point.
I mean, to look at it from that perspective, sure. But when you actually look at what's happened and what the results have been the last 2 years, you can't say Urban Meyer would have done any better than Will Muschamp did this year. There's a lot of problems around Florida's program, and it's not just players.
So you think he bailed because he could see that it wasn't going to be a top 10 team?
I'm not saying that I think he did this. I'm just saying that there's more in play to his decision to leave Florida than just wanting to spend more time with his family. That's all I'm saying. Yeah. I don't know. I'm not trying to say that I know something that nobody else knows or that, you know, this is what the actual deal is. I'm just saying that I'm skeptical of it just being a family concern.
I feel like there are a lot of things that went into his decision to retire. Obviously, the health was one of them. Wanting to spend a little more time with his family, another one. The fact that, you know, he saw, I feel like he saw what, you know, Nick Saban and Les Miles were building there and, you know, figured that there were more of these multi-loss seasons there, that he wasn't just going to dominate everything like he did his first few years here.
And there's also this column from Pat Dooley. I got to give Pat Dooley some love for talking to Will Muschamp and Urban Meyer, where he says, before Muschamp took the job at Florida, Meyer told him multiple times, this team is broken. This program is broken. This football program is broken. I mean, if he's going to say that on his way out to the incoming coach, how can you not say that there's more to it than just his family issues? That's all I'm saying.
Maybe that was a factor, but there's no way he quit entirely because the team was bad. Nobody would suggest that, right?
It's an entirely that was the issue. Of course.
But if he thought they were going to be number one and have a shot at a national title, then he would have stayed through whatever problems he was having.
Without a doubt.
All right, but if he's really going to the hospital,
all right, well, he lost Charlie Strong, he lost Dan Mullen, he lost Tim Tebow, he lost Percy Harvin, and you got Steve Adazio talking about pickle boats and going against offensive linemen to reporters. I mean, this is what you're going through on a daily basis instead of competing for national championships. So, of course, your health issues are going to be exacerbated a lot more when you're not winning football games. Winning football games, you heard from every single coach involved in the game, winning cures everything. Win football games, that he's going to eat a little bit more. He's going to, you know, not worry so much about missing his daughter's volleyball game. All these things go into that.
Tom, are you with what Watts is saying on these things?
A little bit, but another thing, like if you listen to his yesterday, it was either his press conference or the interview he did with Tom Rinaldi afterward. Tom Rinaldi actually did something that wasn't completely sad.
He still used the sad voice.
Oh, so. Yeah, definitely.
But anyway, continue with what you were saying.
Urban was talking about when it really hit him that the coaching was getting to him was that 2009 season when they had just that one loss to Alabama. He said they beat Georgia by 2 touchdowns, and he was furious because they didn't play a perfect game. And, like, that was kind of, like, the turning point for him, like, where things just, like, started, like...
He can say whatever he wants now.
I mean, so you don't put any stock into any of the stuff he's been saying, like, at the press conference yesterday? You didn't... I mean, because you wrote our story on this, kind of just recap what he basically, how he explained away everybody who might have issues with the decisions he's made. What was his kind of rationale for taking the job at this point?
He said that he he thought college football was broke last year and he wanted to take a year off. And somehow, with the most scandal-ridden year in the history of college football, he makes a return.
Yeah, it's fixed now.
Right. So, I mean, there's just all of these things that contradict everything that he says. So, he's a football coach, and football coaches are likened to NFL owners, likened to politicians. They say what they want to the public because that's what they want to be perceived. That's not actually what's going on behind the scenes.
I mean, that's a fair assessment. And he kind of also said that he now feels like he's found a balance between family and coaching that he can work with. And
right.
That he's not.
And he says he's not going to be the perfectionist that he was in 2009.
But does either of you buy that there's this kind of balance out there?
There is a balance out there. There's plenty of coaches that.
Well, for him, though.
For him, I don't know. Like, that remains to be seen. Like, it's you can't always, you know, you can't really change who you are completely like that, but I mean you can make little adjustments that can help ease it, you know what I mean?
There's logistical ways to balance it for the people of the right mindset. Urban Meyer is not that person. If you read Wright Thompson's great feature during LSU Alabama week about Les Miles and his family and how he's balancing it, it works for Les Miles because Les Miles is a loon. He's crazy. He doesn't worry about what players are eating for lunch and where recruits are spending their Friday nights and like all of this stuff that Urban Meyer was sinking himself into, immersing himself into every nuance of every single day-to-day activity. Les Miles doesn't do that. Les Miles is more of a manager. He's that guy. Urban Meyer can't do that. He just can't.
Right. He's always been super involved, and, I mean, here it led to him having to resign, I guess. And now I guess it's easy to say from a year-off perspective that that's not going to happen again, but there's no reason to believe that he wouldn't fall into the same pitfalls.
I will say it'll probably be easier for him in Ohio than it was in Florida because that's where he's from. That's where he's comfortable. This is where, you know, he grew up. This is where his, you know, footholds, where he's been dug in for pretty much his entire life. So now he's returning his family to that. I can see that little symbiotic relationship that he's trying to say is going to be different this time.
Well, see, that's kind of what
that's what he's saying, but I don't know whether to believe it or not. I don't think I can at this point.
I don't know if it's going to be easier in Ohio just because the history of that program, the fans are going to have, you know, demands. They're not going to be settling for.
They've also had a lot of history there, and they know that programs or football teams are cyclical. They go through ups and downs. It's not like in Florida where your fans are just kind of silly and they expect greatness every single season.
Right.
Ohio State has gone through losing seasons and gone through this.
But they still expect winning seasons.
They care about beating Michigan more so than they care about getting a national championship.
Right. I mean, if you can, I guess the expectations are a little bit lower, but they're still, the problem is that now that he's Urban Meyer and everything's been blown up to such a great extent that it has,
I think he's
going to have to win a championship in the next couple of years or else the pressure's going to be worse than it was here.
I don't know about a couple of years. Like, it all depends on what the NCAA hands down to Ohio State after.
Right, but in their next 3 years of championship eligibility, he's going to be expected to win one of those.
Okay, yeah.
Which is, that's a lot of pressure for a guy to be under. But
and I don't know if you've watched them play this year, but that quarterback they've got looks a lot like a couple guys that.
Yeah, he's
Braxton Miller's going to be great for Urban Meyer.
He's supposed to be the perfect Urban Meyer guy.
Exactly. I was watching their game last week, and I'm like, wow, this is exactly what he's thinking when he sees Braxton Miller play. It's because he can come in and install everything that he wants to do on offense with that guy, which is something that he couldn't do last year and this year had he stayed with John Brantley, who he was handcuffed and had to play.
Right.
I feel like if Urban stayed, John Brantley might have transferred because they were still going to keep that spread system.
No, John Brantley was going to be the guy. Where would he go?
You don't transfer as a senior. You lose your last year of eligibility.
Transfer to a Division II school or something because if the school that you're at is obviously not running the offense that's going to fit you.
And it didn't stop him his whole career.
I mean, there was all that talk after Meyer resigned, depending on who Florida brought in, that Brantley might transfer depending on what kind of offense they ran.
Well, I mean, if he was going to sit here through the spread for 3 years, then why would he transfer once he actually finally gets to play and rises to the top of the food chain?
Because it obviously didn't work out for him last year.
But I mean, what was he expecting to be different?
Anyway.
Well, the thing we talked a little bit about Ohio, and I mean, Urban's from Ohio. He was born in Ohio. He worked as a graduate assistant at Ohio State for 2 years. So a lot of people have painted this as kind of his dream job. Do you think he would have taken any other opening, or it had to be Ohio State?
He said that he would not have taken any other opening, and that it had to have been Ohio State. And, I mean, what other job would be open this year for him to have taken that would have been attractive enough to take?
If the Penn State job was there?
No, absolutely not. Are you kidding me?
If Notre Dame or Michigan were open, I think he would have taken those two.
But it had to be one of those three.
One of those three. Because when he was at Utah, it wasn't...
Penn State?
Yeah.
You couldn't pay somebody enough money to go coach Penn State.
Oh, somebody will go coach Penn State.
Obviously, somebody will.
Somebody will, but it's not going to be Urban Meyer. With all the stuff that we're talking about he's dealing with off the field and other issues, you think he wants to deal with a child molestation scandal as well?
I don't think anybody wants that, but it's still the Penn State football program.
No.
They're still one of the elite college football programs.
The guy that follows Joe Paterno is you know, you've got such high expectations, such high regard for everything that goes on with the program at a place like Penn State. With Ohio State, not only can you come in with that tattoo scandal looking like nothing now when compared to Miami and compared to Penn State and compared to what's going on in Syracuse, you also have a better football team, a better base, a better everything. I don't understand why Penn State would be attractive at all.
Is it really that much of a better football team? I mean, Penn State was ranked like right there with Ohio State all year.
Penn State's been ranked higher this year, but the whole year.
And I mean, they're both really storied programs. That was the only point I was trying to make. But regardless, you know, Urban's at Ohio State now, and I think that's kind of led to a lot of speculation in terms of maybe Ohio State, Florida, and the Gator Bowl still on the table. That's something that a lot of people would be interested to see, obviously, given this news. And I saw on Twitter yesterday, Matt Elam seems to think that it would be nice if they had to play Ohio State in the Gator Bowl. He said something to the effect of, God, I hope we get to play those guys. In terms
another of another great show of intellect from Matt Elam.
In terms of the general player reaction and coaches and everything we've heard from inside Florida about kind of the reaction to the news that Meyer is going, and more so when we got to talk to him, it was the rumors that Meyer was going. What do you guys think is the general feel of the team on that front?
I mean, to the public, I think it's going to be, oh, well, Coach Meyer, good for him. Who wouldn't do that for their own self? Blah, 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 blah. But on the inside, I got to feel they're feeling betrayed. You can read into that if you read Marcus Gilbert's tweets about the whole thing.
He's pretty fun.
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of stuff that's going on behind the scenes. Jelani Jenkins, after the game on Saturday, just simple no comment. I don't even want to talk about that. I mean, it's definitely a burning issue. It's for a lot of these guys, their coach is kind of like a father figure when they peace out and go off to another program and take a better deal. It kind of feels like they're getting abandoned again.
I'm not quite sure. I mean, like, from what we heard from them, I mean, Omar Hunter was like the only one that like came out resounding. He's like, oh, you know, good for Coach Meyer. You know, I can't say anything bad about him. You know, he brought me here. He made me who I am right now. But, I mean, a lot of the other guys just had no comments. But then if you look on Twitter yesterday, there were some of them, John Bostic, or I think it was Bostic, or Jelani, that's who it was. He was like, people are blowing this out of proportion, blah, blah, blah. Andre DeBose said he's not mad. He understands that, you know, college football's a business, and who wouldn't take that deal? I feel like there's definitely going to be mixed reactions throughout that team, but I feel they're not going to come out and tell us how they really feel either way.
Right. There's going to be a big mix both from the team and from the players, because it depends whether you buy into Watson's general theory that it had a lot to do with him just trying to get away from the program and the mess that was the Florida program, and as we can see this year with the 6-6 season. If you tend to believe that side of it, then obviously you're going to be more upset, because it gives you more evidence of that, just that he wanted to be somewhere else, not here. And if you tend to believe that he actually thought he had a problem and then the offer was too good to pass up, I think there's a chance you're going to empathize a little bit. So, I mean, it's obviously an issue that can go either way. You got something?
I was going to say another thing that's kind of fishy is he resigned on December 8th last year, and 2 weeks later is when the tattoo scandal broke.
Oh, no. There's no way he could have known that it was going to turn into everything it did.
I'm not saying he could have known, and I'm not saying that he knew Jim Tressel was going to be fired and that was
You're just insinuating that he thought that the Ohio State job might be open?
That's
sure.
I
can't get on with that, man.
Because if it was...
no.
Whatever you want to think, man.
Well, no, if it was just that he wanted the Ohio State job that badly, then there's no reason he couldn't just stay at Florida and then jump to Ohio State. He wouldn't have to take a year off with the hope that maybe it opens up at some point.
I agree there, but I'm just saying there's the writing's on the wall there. You can think whatever you want. I'm a cynic by nature.
Conspiracy theorists have more evidence to work with because of what you just said. I would agree with that. That's something that's out there.
But Urban couldn't have possibly thought that Jim Tressel would mishandle that situation so bad that it would cost him his job 6 months later.
It's tough to imagine, but it's possible. And like anytime there's rumors of things going on within a program, you never really know how deep it runs, and maybe it was more than just the tattoo thing, and then it wouldn't have been that crazy for Tressel to get fired. So, I mean, there's a chance he knew something, and it worked out the way it did, and now he's got the job. So,
but I mean, if Tressel comes out and he's honest about it the whole time, Tressel still has his job right now. But maybe, it's because he withheld information that he wound up having to resign.
Right, right. But the thing is just that, like, maybe Meyer, in his conspiracy theory, thought that there was more information out there that was being held in terms of it was more than just the tattoo things, and there was all kinds of benefits, and there was stuff that was going to come out, and then Tressel would be an obvious fire, and then there would obviously be an opening.
Right, and he's got plenty of feelers and connections in Ohio to know that type of stuff before it's leaked to the media.
But anyway, to kind of shift over a little bit more of the news that's kind of come out since the game against Florida State, which we'll recap in a minute, but there's rumors going around today that Josh Shaw and Lyndon Trail are going to be leaving the program, and I don't know if either of you has anything to say on either of those two. We know Trail's a guy who couldn't find the field, and Shaw was a minor contributor, but he wasn't that important. So you guys can kind of weigh in on those two. But overall, is this going to be a trend, do you think? Are we going to have a couple more guys leave before the bowl game or before next season, do you think?
I think there's definitely some guys that, you know, that Urban recruited that or fit the spread offense more that, you know, might be making some calls out his way, see if they want him right now. But I think for the most part, most of the players are going to be sticking out, but I can see a handful of guys transferring. Obviously, there's those rumors about coaches going over with Urban, too.
Yeah, I think it's just the beginning of more to come, for sure. I think there's going to be at least a handful of transfers before spring practice begins. You've got Mark Pantone leaving, rumors Mickey Marotti leaving, DJ Durkin will probably leave as well.
DJ Durkin out in Georgia right now recruiting for Florida while he's being courted to Ohio State.
Yeah, it's a little weird.
Right, so I just think it's going to be a continuation of what we've seen throughout the year. I mean, we've seen transfers from the beginning of, you know, from summer through fall camp, through the season, middle of the season, Gerald Christian and Robert Clark transfer. As soon as the season's over, Lyndon Trail and Josh Shaw leave. I think that's it's just more to come.
Right.
So did Gerald Christian and Robert Clark hit up Urban Meyer now?
I mean, Robert Clark joked about it. I don't think he was serious. But, I mean, it's certainly a trend that we've seen with people leaving the program. And, I mean, Tom, you kind of said a little bit about maybe it has something to do with Meyer at Ohio State and guys who want to go there. I mean, when you talk about it, do you think it has more to do with that, or is it just how the program's gone since then? Because I'm not really sure.
I think it's more, I don't think Meyer has as much to do with it as some people are making it out to be. I feel like it's more so that Muschamp is trying to instill his stamp on this program. He's trying to put the way he wants to run things. He's trying to get rid of everything that was broken from when Meyer left and start again. And you had to do that after the results of the season.
Wait, so more than these guys leaving, Muschamp is wanting them to leave?
Yes.
Even with nobody on scholarship and just an empty team with no depth, he's trying to get rid of people?
I think he'd rather have no players than players that don't want to do it his way.
Really?
Yes.
So, I mean, how do you kind of envision this going? Is it just like by the way he treats them and the way practice goes, they know that they should leave? Or is he actually like, you'd think there's actually like efforts from him outwardly to get these people out of the program?
I think it goes both ways. I think that there's players that want to leave, and if he gets an inkling of that they're not committed to doing it the way he wants it to be done, then he's going to tell them, go ahead and get the F out of here. Go ahead. We don't want you.
Right.
Yeah, that's the type of mindset that Will Muschamp has. He doesn't want to have to deal with players that are still thinking about, you know, what could have been with another coach or what could be with another coach in the future, or what could be different if this were to happen. He doesn't care. He wants people that are committed to doing it the way he wants it to be done.
Well, then I guess an important distinction to be made would be, is this different from any other coach? Is it because of something he's done, or is it just anytime there's a new guy?
It's because of the way the program was when he came in, to where you've got guys that are older guys that have allegiances to previous regimes and younger guys that are brought in by him that have allegiances to him, because you haven't seen many freshmen transfer it's been mostly juniors, sophomores, and seniors.
Well, then shouldn't that happen at every program when there's a change in coaching
staff?
Well,
when there's a change in coaching staff at every program, it's not this magnitude. It's not this broken.
We're going from a messed up spread option team to a pro style team is what the jump they're trying to make. And I think a year of 6-6 certainly doesn't help. Is that a factor? Is it just more so? Is it the bad season part of the reason people are going out, or is it more so just it's just a difference in ideals and playing time?
I think part of the bad season is the difference in ideals and playing time too.
Of course, because you've got players on the roster that were recruited to play a spread option offense. And
right, but if Florida wins the games that could go either way this season, they would still lose to Alabama, they still lose to LSU. They conceivably could have won all the other ones. Are all these guys still here? Is this not a thought? Or is it just because they aren't playing and they don't have similar ideals and maybe don't see eye to eye with Muschamp on how things should go?
Well, we haven't seen high-profile guys leave. We've seen guys that are struggling to make an impact, struggling to get on the field, leave. And that's because they can't transition to this offense or to this defense.
And it's a fair thought, Tom. Is that kind of where – is that your line of thinking, basically? Yeah. All right. Well, I mean, it's hard for me to kind of say where I stand in terms of why guys would be leaving, because when you commit to so much more than just a coach, which is something that they talk about. In terms of the school and the program and the academic side of it and the overall brand that you're being a part
of. Right, but when it comes down to it, these are 18-, 19-year-old, 20-year-old kids that are thinking about nothing but their future and their livelihood. And if they're not able to get on the field because of a coaching change, because of a scheme change, then why would they continue to stick around just because they committed to playing for Florida? Like you said, college football is a business. And for them, their only shot a lot of the time of making it in life is to make it as a football player. If they can't make it under this coach, they're going to go somewhere else where they can try to make it.
I mean, it makes sense to me, and I guess along these lines, the guy everybody wants to talk about is Jeff Driscoll. Driscoll put out on Twitter, which is a source now, that he doesn't plan on going anywhere, and he's going to be a Gator for a while, and his high school coach was contacted and said similar things, and his dad was contacted and basically said Driscoll's going to be sticking around. Does that news come as a surprise to you guys? Because he's clearly behind Brissett on the depth chart, and I think everything we've seen and everything we knew coming into the season is that Brissett is Weiss's favorite, so to speak, just because he was so heavily recruited, even though Driscoll has already signed on to play here.
Right. I'm not completely sold that Driscoll will not leave. I don't think he will, but I can see that being a distinct possibility. After Florida lost to Florida State on Saturday, the players were leaving the field, and FSU's band was playing the war chant as the Seminole players celebrated on their sideline over there. And Jacoby Brissett was one of the last players off the field. And as he's walking through the end zone, Charlie Weiss stops him and has him watch that celebration, watch the Seminoles celebrating in Ben Hill Griffin in the swamp. And the reason for that is conceivably to ingrain that in him, because he's the guy going forward. He wants him to remember that going forward. So, I mean, obviously, Brissett is Charlie Weiss's guy, and he wants Brissett to be the guy going forward, but I don't think Brissett has done enough this season in his time to solidify that role going forward. I feel like if Driscoll is going to transfer, it will be after spring practice or after the summer when it becomes clear that he can't win the job, because I feel like right now neither of them has a leg up on the other, and it will be an open competition next year.
I kind of believe that Driscoll's in it for the long haul, just not necessarily for football.
I mean, if you're the number one quarterback recruit, you're going to play football in college.
Are you?
Yes. Why not?
Yes.
Why would you not just go to a different school?
I mean, you're also a good baseball player, too.
How good, though? You're the number one quarterback recruit.
Are you really – you really think it's that outrageous that he was switched to baseball?
Yes.
Where was he ranked Where was he ranked in, the baseball recruiting stuff?
He wasn't.
He wasn't?
They didn't pay any attention to him because he committed to football.
He's not going to play baseball. He's a great baseball player.
Define great. What do we know about him?
He was a great center fielder in high school and through his whole life.
Was
he's got a rocket arm.
Bat 500 and stuff.
I don't know his exact stats, but I've talked.
You would have to be freaking awesome to pass up on being the number one quarterback recruit.
Well, if you're not playing, and if you want to stick at Florida, then why not play baseball?
Why would you
want
to stick at Florida if you can't?
Well, if he's saying he's in it for the long haul.
That's what they're going to say. I mean, that doesn't mean that's what the truth of the situation is.
The fact that you're just laughing off oh, there's no chance that Jeff Driscoll would ever just play baseball is stupid.
Why is it more likely that he would play baseball here than play football somewhere else? After, like, taking... I'm assuming he hasn't played baseball much recently. He's probably in football mode. I mean, he left early to come here for, you know, spring practice in the summer season and stuff like that. And then he went through the whole football season and was fighting for a job. And now he's still a part of that program and presumably has not been contacted with the baseball people and hasn't been involved in their stuff because they've been doing their fall scrimmages or whatever it is that's been going on, and he definitely hasn't been involved in that. So what? Why would he not either pursue football here or pursue football elsewhere before that?
Maybe he thinks he has a brighter future in baseball now, that like he's stuck behind this. If he has to go and sit out another year by transferring somewhere else, maybe he doesn't want to do that.
I don't know. I'm skeptical. I guess it's possible, but I'm pretty skeptical in terms... Just because... Just such a guy that was so highly rated and so, like, sought after, and there was everything about him before he came here, and he was... I mean, I don't think it was consensus, basically, that he was the best quarterback, right? And people were talking about how he was going to start right away, and he was going to be ahead of Brantley. And because he's behind the number three quarterback recruit, I think it's a little bit of a stretch to say he would kind of leave the sport.
I mean, not all recruits pan out. Like, what did you see from him on the field this year? Right, but he hasn't determined
that yet. He's thrown 15 passes. Like, how can you say he's going to give up and go play baseball? That's just asinine to me. It's just completely
I'm not saying he's definitely going to. I'm saying it's a possibility.
I don't know. It'd be so tough to completely devote to one sport and then say, well, I'm just going to try to get onto a different one. But, yeah, I mean, I just don't see it.
I don't either.
Anyway, we talked a little bit about Florida State celebrating on Florida's field. We can talk a little bit about how we got to that moment. Florida State won 21-7 on Saturday in what was supposed to be a nice senior day send-off for a lot of these Florida guys, and it was about the worst scenario we could have imagined for John Brantley, right? There's nothing worse than three interceptions and then going out with an injury.
Yeah, that's a pretty terrible end to your season and to your career as a Florida Gator.
You've really got a feel for this guy at this point. And what do we know about the injury? It was just concussion symptoms? It came out that it was actually a concussion.
That's what his father said, supposedly. I mean, that's what his father told a couple different reports.
It would absolutely be the worst if that was like, if he couldn't make the bowl game. You know, some concussions are lingering and you don't get them. And if he was somehow out for the bowl game, that would be just the worst ending ever.
I don't think he's had another concussion this season. We don't know. We wouldn't have been told. But I couldn't conceivably see him being out for the bowl game with an injury,
right?
But I could conceivably see them playing Jacoby Brissett and Jeff Driscoll in the bowl game to see what they've got.
I think they feel like they owe it to Brantley to get him
probably
out.
Yeah, I agree with you there, but I'm not going to rule it out.
Tom, when we looked at Brantley's performance, and you can weigh in on if you think he'll play in the bowl and where you think how that would work out, but when we watched the game on Saturday, did you think, what happened that there was the three interceptions? Was it just bad throws, or was he making bad reads, or he wasn't in it?
He was locking in the receivers. Like, he wasn't looking for other options. Like, on that one in the quadruple coverage, as soon as he stepped up to avoid the pressure, we all knew where he was going with that ball, and so did Florida State's defense.
Right.
And I don't know. I don't think he locked on to Rainey on that one. He definitely locked on to Dunbar on the first interception.
But the second one was
a play action misdirection, and his first read was on the right side of the field. And then he saw that wasn't open, so he just chucked up the throwback to Rainey, hoping Rainey could make a play.
Dude, as soon as he stepped up avoiding the pressure, he was looking downfield to the left the whole time.
Okay. Well, when Rainey ran out of the backfield, there was two guys trailing him. He thought he could just throw up and let Rainey make a play. He didn't see the two guys coming over from the safety spots.
Right.
I mean, I'm not trying to say that it was a good decision, but he didn't lock on to Rainey from the snap on that play. And on the third interception, it looked like there was a miscommunication. Either he threw the wrong pass to the wrong spot or Dunbar ran the wrong route. But either way.
Wait, the third one you're saying?
Yeah.
The third one, I think he just screwed up. Because, like...
That's what I'm saying. It was... I don't know whose error it was, but there was a definite miscommunication. Well, either he threw to the wrong spot, or Quentin Dunbar ran the wrong route.
Drake thinks he may have overthrown Chris Rainey.
Because Rainey's in the slot, and he's running an out, and then Dunbar is running, like, a curl thing, I guess, is what he ended up running. I don't know. And Brantley threw it, like, softly, but way over Rainey's head to, like, where Dunbar was never going to be because it was a curl, and if he was running a fly, he would have been past that point anyway. So, like, it might have been an overthrow. It was just so far off, I had no idea who he was throwing it to. And, I mean, just to shout out his stat line, it's 9 of 15, 104 yards and 3 interceptions. And for a team that a lot of the time has relied on Brantley to move the ball through the air, that just I mean, because they're not going to be able to run the ball on the ground. And then once he had to go out, it certainly didn't help matters. And then Brissett came in. He was 4 of 13 for 27 yards and an interception. What did you guys see from him in terms of trying unsuccessfully to pick up the slack with Brantley out of there? What did he show you on Saturday, if anything?
Not much.
I mean, are we concerned based on what we've seen from Brissett this season? We talked about this a little bit already, but, I mean, is this add to a bad resume that he's got so far?
I mean, it's hard to, you know, just gauge his resume based on, you know, spot action in games like this when he's had to come in because of injuries. I mean, neither him nor Driscoll really expected to play this year, I'm sure. And then to be thrown in, especially the way it happened on Saturday with Brantley just getting knocked out of the game right before halftime again, you know, having to come in cold, not really warmed up. It's a tough situation for him, but he didn't look all that great. He made some bad throws, bad decisions.
Right, and I think it could have been another spot where they come in with the Brantley game plan, and then when he gets hurt, it's kind of a completely different thing for these two guys. And I guess they said that after this happened against Alabama and they were totally unprepared, that they were going to have kind of a working backup plan for every game, that if they have to go to one of these other guys because they bring a different skill set, they can run a different offense. But it just didn't seem to be there. Did you notice it, Matt? Did you notice a change in the play calling? And just what was your evaluation of Brissett Saturday?
That's the trouble for me, because I was writing the majority of the second half, so I didn't get to watch as intently as I would have liked Jacoby Brissett's play in the second half. But just looking at the stat line and the few throws that I saw, it was in more of the same. I mean, I haven't really seen any progression from him from the Auburn game where he was replaced at halftime with Driscoll because he wasn't performing. I mean, I just feel like neither of them has shown much of anything this year. For as highly touted as they were coming out of high school, I mean, you got to expect at least a little bit more. I mean, of course, it's tough circumstances for a freshman getting thrown in like that, but you know, there's plenty of instances where freshmen have come in and made great plays and made great contributions to their team.
Right. That was a point that I remember trying to make after the LSU and the Alabama games is, yeah, you're a freshman and, yeah, these are great defenses, but there's a certain level of bad you can reach where it's still a concern.
Right. And I feel like this
if we're not there, we're close.
A really bad recruiting class for quarterbacks. I mean, if Jeff Driscoll and Jacoby Brissett are 1 and 3...
Well, they weren't even 5 stars, right? They were...
No, there were no 5 stars.
Right.
So, I mean, I don't know a ton about the ranking system and how many 5 stars they usually give out, but it's not great if they're...
Vanderbilt's got a 5-star taking a visit there.
So. All right, so it can't be that difficult. Yeah, I mean, I guess there is an outside chance that these guys just aren't good, but for a large part, it remains to be seen. We're not judging too much off of this,
right?
Right,
of course. There's not much you can take from this. It's their first year. It's their first, you know, test in the system. You've got to give them a full offseason. You've got to give them a full, you know, working with the first team and knowing that it's their job or fighting for that job.
And what doesn't help is that they clearly have no receivers. We saw it again Saturday. We had Chris Rainey had 4 receptions. That's the most on the team, and he has
five yards. Yeah.
And you know, Quentin Dunbar actually got in the end zone, which was nice. He didn't have to run straight down the field either. He was doing some other things. He was over the middle. It was weird. I didn't know what that was all about.
If they can just get like one dynamic receiver, they should be fine, because the offense is going to be based on the power running game and the passes to the tight ends. You watch New England on Sundays, that's the same offense.
Yeah.
Rob Gronkowski and Aaron Hernandez.
You can get those guys in
every
here.
Single Sunday. Well, Jordan Reed and A.C. Leonard have looked very well.
We need to talk about A.C. Leonard. 3 catches, 65 yards, looked like a good option, and he got hurt in the game, so that kind of limited his production. He could have had an even bigger day. I mean, has he shown enough for you guys to see some promise for the future? It is 3 catches in one game.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. I mean, he's catching the ball down the field. He had more than a 20-yard average, and he's caught balls in traffic. He gets separation. He's made plays that none of the receivers on this roster can make.
Right. He looks like a more fluid and athletic pass catcher to me.
Yeah, definitely.
He's a natural.
From what I saw from him when I was covering recruiting, he looked great. And I read a bunch of scouts and recruiting analysts say that his skill set reminds them a lot of Aaron Hernandez.
I don't like to say Aaron Hernandez because everybody tries to compare everybody to Aaron Hernandez. It's like every time there's a short wide receiver and they try to compare him to Wes Welker, and I try to stay away from the stereotypes, but he did have some of those qualities for sure, I thought.
I think he is more of a prototypical pass-catching tight end, whereas Aaron Hernandez was kind of an H-back kind of guy. They like to use him, you know, with that read option. They threw shovel passes to Aaron Hernandez a lot. He got a lot of screens. I don't see A.C. Leonard as that type of make-a-play-in-space guy. He's a guy that creates a mismatch on a linebacker and runs good routes and has good hands.
Well, here's the thing that I'm a little bit worried about, and they are convinced that they want to be a downhill running team, and we'll talk more about the running game struggles in a half a second, but he's still not kind of the inline blocking tight end guy that you would look for at that position, and is that something that's going to limit him here in terms of what they want to do?
I think he's a better blocker than you might be giving him credit for. I mean,
he's not a giant guy.
He's
not mauling people.
He had that block that sprung the...
It's pretty big. I'm pretty sure he's like 6'4", 250. He's a big dude.
He had that block that sprung the touchdown run against Vandy to seal the game.
And plus, he's a freshman. This is his first year in a college weight program.
And he got put behind the eight ball by tearing his meniscus in the preseason.
Right. I'm sure that didn't help. And we did see that... I mean, we did see even in the spring game that he looked like a pretty serviceable option. So maybe there's some hope. Do you guys think that... I mean, what we've seen from him and what we've seen from Jordan Reed.
6'4", 244.
Okay, so he's bigger than I thought he was.
He's got plenty of room there to be a great blocker.
Yeah, you look at him and you look at Jordan Reed. Jordan Reed, team's leading pass catcher this season. Do you think that we can see him pass Jordan Reed on the depth chart?
I don't think that there's...
Or is it going
to
matter?
There's not a passing. I think that in this offense, you have to have two good tight ends. That's what Charlie Weiss wants, is two good tight ends. And he's got it. I don't think there's a passing. I think they're 1A and 1B, and you can say whichever one you want for whichever formation, whichever scheme they're running for that play or that game or that series.
Right, and I guess with the wide receiver situation next year, it's still going to be what it's going to be, and unless there's some fabulous freshmen I haven't heard about.
Well, they've got Juwan Story, who redshirted this year.
Yeah, okay. And he's a guy that's 6'4", has size. You know, he could be that big receiver.
Until I see him play football well, I'm going to say whatever.
And then there's also a couple, you know, highly touted guys that they still have a chance of bringing in with this recruiting class, with Stephon Diggs and Nelson Aguilar.
Right. Well, my only point in bringing that up was that there's a good chance that they're going to play two tight ends as their best receiving options on the majority of their plays next season, and that's just going to be the way the offense works.
Right. Well, I don't think you're going to see a receiver catch 60 or 70 balls at Florida for probably 2 or 3 years.
Unless that great guy comes out of nowhere.
Right, exactly. I mean,
nobody that's in the program right now is going
to
do that.
Should Stephon Diggs or Nelson Aguilar come to Florida, they will get that opportunity in their freshman season, without a doubt.
Right. But anyway, as I teased...
You mean Quentin Dunbar's not going to break out and be that deep threat again?
I mean, we can talk about this since he had a decent game. Are you thinking that there's development here? Are we seeing him coming along? Is there any faith?
You've got to say that there's definitely development, although, you know, one of the touchdowns comes in garbage time against Florida State, and then the other comes against Furman. Still... their touchdowns, which are things that he did not have earlier in the year.
Right.
And he showed some pretty good footwork and a good awareness in the end zone of that, and the only catch against Furman and, again, against Florida State.
And like we said, we're seeing him run different routes, which is more than just a guy where it's just like run down the field and hope something good happens. And, I mean, it's just hard for me to get on board because there was so much hype, and then for a while it was nothing. And then you see flashes and you want to buy into what they were trying to sell you before. And it's just a dangerous game to let them tell you
whatever.
I mean,
I feel like Quentin Dunbar has some maturing to do as a football player before he can...
As a person?
before he can take that next step. But I feel like there's pieces there. Andre DeBose had, his best season so far. He showed some pretty darn good bright spots. You just got to get him to run more than one route.
Right, yeah, that would be kind of handy. I mean, we talk a lot about how he only goes downfield, and he's had a couple catches this season over the middle, but it's the vast majority of the time he's out there. I don't know if – I think other teams know he's going deep, and I think that's because he is on the majority of the snaps that he plays. So.
I mean, they need to get him more involved, and I hate to say even the words in the same sentence, but in the way they use Percy Harvin
right.
in crossing routes and men in plays in space so he can use his speed to make plays.
Do you think he's the kind of guy that – I mean, you want to talk about Percy Harvin? Could he be getting handoffs? Is this
no?
Kind of
I don't.
Thing?
I don't want to go there.
But just more as a receiver who does more than just one thing.
I mean, I don't recall them running many wide receiver screens this year. I don't like the wide receiver screen, but for a guy like Andre DeBose, it makes sense.
Right, they've done it a few times, but not to him, which is what I thought was weird. Right. But anyway, like we kind of teased a little bit earlier, we're talking about the run game, and they've struggled against good teams all year, and this was no different. They ran for 54 yards, and I think I kind of buy into what they say where, and I actually want to, if I have some time this week, I want to look at kind of game by game and compare inside runs versus outside runs, but They have not been able to run it between the tackles, and against the good teams, they just haven't had the speed to get to the edge. Is that as simple as the issue is, or is there something that's just all it comes down to, right? Is there anything else in terms of why they can't get it going?
Personnel. The players on the field is why
offensive
they can't get it
going. Right. Well, I mean, do you put it more on the backs, or do you put it more on the offensive line, which is the other thing I wanted to talk about?
I put it on both. I don't think you can say it's one or the other, without a doubt. I think it's got to go more so on the offensive line than the backs. Although Chris Rainey and Jeff Demps are not going to be ever in their lifetime be between the tackles runners. And when you have, I mean, like Muschamp said in the press conference after Florida State, they're doing the best they can with what they've got. They've tried everything they can think of to try. And when you can't run between the tackles and you can't have those, you don't have those road grader offensive linemen. Tyler did a column on that Florida's offensive line is, the smallest in the SEC? Something like that. They're tiny.
Yeah. It's like it was everybody except Vanderbilt, I think.
Right. I mean, you can't have a successful power running game, downhill running game, when you've got a 160-pound running back, a 175-pound running back, and a light offensive line that can't move the line of scrimmage. Yeah.
Personally, I tend to assign a lot more blame to the line of these backs because I think Chris Rainey is a very good player in his own right, and I think he has the capability to run between
right.
the tackles.
He's got the vision.
If you give him the holes.
Right.
Exactly. If the offensive line can create the holes, Chris Rainey can gain you, the 4 or 5 yards of run that you ideally would want.
Right. If there's a hole there, he can find it and hit it, but the problem is there hasn't usually been a hole there. And
I
can't blame these guys because the thing that you see and people complain about is with Demps and Rainey, they're trying to get into a hole and there's freaking linebackers coming through the hole and there's guys coming unblocked and then they have to bounce it outside and people say, hey, why are you bouncing it outside? What are you thinking? This is not the way you're supposed to do. You got to run downhill. That's what we're trying to do. But if they're not blocking anybody, you don't really have an option there.
And they've rotated and had, I want to look at it, but I've venture to say they've had a different offensive line. Like the starting five on the offensive line has been different for at least the last 7 games of the season.
Right, they've tried a lot of different things, and then even who cares who starts, because then they're going to rotate guys in and out during the thing.
Well, they're rotating guys in and out because not one guy has shown that he's better than anybody else.
Right, I think Jalapio's been there like the whole time. Other than that,
I think
anybody's hit or miss
because there's nobody else to play at right guard. I think he's probably the best option at right guard. He's the only one that's been in the lineup every single week. And I don't think he's that good.
Right. That's in general, the weak point of the whole team is the offensive line, if we had to pick one, right?
Yeah.
I think somebody did an informal Twitter poll, and it was like, where do you want to see fixed most? And I think offensive line got a ton of people shouting that out. And I can't disagree, because it's just been the problem with everything. We've seen how quickly teams can get pressure on whoever the quarterback is. We've seen how few running lanes there are, so a lot of the blame just falls on those guys, and that's really what it comes down to.
Yeah, exactly. If you have a better offensive line, your quarterback has more time, the receivers have more time to get open, the running backs have more lanes, and the whole offense just works. That's why, you see these NFL teams drafting, offensive linemen so high a lot of the time.
Right.
Only offensive linemen that get drafted high are tackles.
Yeah.
Well, no, we had the 49ers took Upati in number 12 overall or something like that. Like, these guys still go relatively high. The Pounceys went pretty
the
early.
The Pro Bowl caliber offensive linemen will go in the first round, but it's really rare to see a guard or a center be
right.
selected in the top 15 or 20 picks.
That's fair. And, I mean, that's all I really have on the offense, but I think we would be remiss if we didn't talk about Trey Burton's negative 14-yard quarterback sneak, which is
the worst quarterback sneak in the history of quarterback
sneaks.
That's
the low point of the season, right? Like, if you want to tell somebody about this season, you only get one play to do it, that's the one you show them, right?
Kind of like last year, if someone asks the same question, you show them the play where John Brantley threw
yep.
it and then caught his
exactly.
own pass on his back.
That's the one. It's the Trey Burton quarterback sneak is the play of the season, correct?
The most Trey Burton play ever.
Right.
It's just sickening to have to watch Trey Burton play football.
I think Watts has taken the Trey Burton hate a little bit too far. Like, he's bad, but he's still a player, and you can
What is he good at? Everything.
Yeah.
Playing quarterback?
All right, you're Will Muschamp. Where do you put Trey Burton on your football field where there's a player there's a position where he's clearly the best player?
He plays fullback on third downs and second and
Hunter
seven.
Hunter Joyer is clearly a better fullback than Trey Burton.
On third downs and second and seven plus, Trey Burton plays fullback for my football team every time.
No.
Over Hunter Joyer? Yeah.
Why?
Has Hunter Joyer ever caught a pass in his life?
It doesn't matter.
Trey Burton can block well enough.
You're not throwing passes to your fullback.
Trey Burton catches passes to the fullback all the time.
And that's what's wrong with the offense.
He tries to make a cut and he falls down.
No, he's gained a couple yards
he
on these flat passes.
I'm not saying he's terrible. He does not have a role on a football field.
I'm not saying he's a good player, but he is the fullback.
Just because he's
third
an athlete
downs.
Doesn't mean he's a football player.
Right, but he's the best option at fullback on passing downs.
No, he's not.
How is he not?
How is he? How is he the best option at any position ever?
What are you doing throwing your fullback on a third and seven anyway?
Because right. You got to check it down when they drop a million people in the zone.
That's what you have a running back for.
There's a bunch of times they've dumped off the flat passes to Trey Burton. He's actually got
it. But they shouldn't be doing that.
What do you mean they shouldn't be doing that? They've converted on this play before, getting Trey Burton the ball
once?
On third down. No, there was the time he jumped over Tyrann Mathieu. He did it against South Carolina. He did it against Vanderbilt a couple times. And then early in the season when they were doing that to everybody, he was out there.
With Trey?
I'm a Trey Burton fan. I'm just saying he's...
You're probably cheering in the press box when he laid that block on the...
This is one of those things where it's like people with Tim Tebow. When everybody loves a guy so much, people just start to hate him for no reason.
All right, I can buy
this
that.
This is you guys with Trey Burton.
I can buy that. But honestly, I just...
But there is reason to hate Trey Burton.
Football, and I don't see why he plays football. I just don't. I just don't understand how he gets... like handed pads and a helmet and gets a scholarship and everybody, you know, oh, Trey Burton, his name gets announced and people cheer. Like, I just don't understand. Like,
right.
He's got a pretty face. Woohoo! And he scored 6 touchdowns against
you
Kentucky.
Fan of Trey Burton's face?
Awesome. Awesome.
Big into Trey Burton's looks now?
Yeah.
So
he's dreamy.
Would you say Trey Burton is the least deserving player on the roster to have a scholarship?
Right. Like, if there was another David Lerner, I'd rather have two David Lerners on the team get scholarships.
What are the guy with the disease?
Okay, would you rather have another Xavier Nixon than Trey Burton?
Sure, because you can put that Xavier Nixon in when the original Xavier Nixon gets tired.
Then you can bench at least one Xavier Nixon.
That'd be a plus. All right, before we completely abandon Trey Burton, the Trey Burton Wildcat was once again in effect this weekend. It's just useless, right? It's terrible. There's nothing good about
this
formation.
Because Trey Burton runs it, yes.
Like, there's you.
When Chris Rainey ran it against LSU with Mike Gillisley in the backfield, it was successful.
Right, but you guys agree to me that there's no value in the Trey Burton.
No,
absolutely.
Okay,
just like there's
sure
no value in Trey Burton playing football.
But I do.
They went to that Wildcat package as a last resort in games where they were getting blown out and they needed to run the ball
right.
And they wanted to, you know, not make it a 45-0 showing. They wanted to put some points on the board. They had that's their last resort when they knew they couldn't move the ball any other way. That's what they went to.
Okay, well, here's the thing I'll say about that is I think a lot of people have started to hate on Charlie Weiss a lot towards the end of the season for some of the things that he's done with the offense, and maybe they don't agree with the way that he's run it and the way he's handled the program so far. And I have to completely disagree because I think what I fault an offensive coordinator for is like what Steve Adazio did, where you come out in shotgun with 3 wide receivers and you run the halfback dive every single play. That's the kind of thing where you see the offensive coordinator and you say, that guy's doing a bad job.
Right.
But Charlie Weiss has tried the pistol, the eye form. They're coming single back. They've done some, like, random wing stuff. And then they got Trey Burton running the Wildcat. And they had the Wildcat where Chris Rainey was taking snaps. And Omarius Hines was coming on the sweep thing. Like, I think that
but
when they try...
to throw passes.
Right. When they try this much stuff and it still doesn't work out, that's on the players more than the coordinator, right?
Without a doubt.
Yeah.
Without a doubt. And they have to do all this gimmicky BS stuff because the players aren't good enough.
Right. So the people. So I mean, you guys are with me in terms of people who don't like Charlie Weiss and want him gone are just out of their mind, basically.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. For
okay.
sure.
I just want to make sure we got that on the podcast,
right.
So people.
This is on the record.
The people right. that say that are the people that don't know much about football or have not played football, because at the end of the day, football is about players. Players on the field, not plays.
Okay, coach.
That's why I'm just saying.
Right.
Like, that's why against Furman, the beginning of the game, Furman dominated with plays. At the end of the game, Furman lost because Florida's players were
better.
That's the story. That's right. Football. When you win the one-on-one matchup in front of you, that's football.
I would say a coordinator can lose a game, but it can't necessarily win a game, right? Is that kind of where you're going with that?
Yes.
All right. Just want to make sure we got, you know, you defend Charlie Weiss a little bit because he takes a lot of heat.
Judge Charlie Weiss in 2013.
should he still be healthy enough to be the offensive coordinator here?
And I think he, I have a feeling he will be. There's a lot of people.
I feel like he wants to be.
Still in charge here.
Right. I mean, I feel like he wants to be, but I also feel like he's another guy that actually has real family issues at home and real health issues to deal with.
Right.
And that's visible on a daily basis. So I can see that taking a toll on him, possibly, should a next season go the same way this season did, and it's just more of a headache. Because what does he have to gain from continuing to coach?
That's fair.
And I don't see that same, you know, necessary, like, perfection, pursuit of perfection, that drive in him that you see in a guy like Urban Meyer. Right. You know what
and
I mean?
It's a lot to read into something that was ultimately insignificant, but when we talked about that moment after the game where it was him and Jacoby Brissett on the field and using it as a teaching moment, that's the look of a guy that's going to be here.
Right, yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Right. So, anyway. I feel like he wants to be here. I'm not saying that he doesn't want to be here. I just feel like if issues arise in his family or with his health, that they could override his desire to be a football coach.
Right. A quick side note about that Charlie Weiss, Jacoby Brissett thing. I think that like that scene was like one of the coolest things I've seen all season.
Yeah,
I just like at night after the game, FSU's fans and band going crazy, doing the tomahawk chop, and Jacoby Brissett and Charlie Weiss just staring off in the distance at him, like having just like a little mentor moment.
It was a very real moment.
I had to pop out the iPhone and take a little video. I will not lie.
It was pretty cool.
Yeah, I wish we had a photographer to get like behind them.
Yeah, I wish we had photographers that covered these games. Anyway, that's a completely different thing. Talk about the defensive side of the ball a little bit. Florida State had 95 yards. They're the first team since 2000, or I don't even know if it happened in 2000, but we know it's the first team since at least 2000 to win a game with less than 100 yards of total offense. And
they averaged 0.7 yards per carry and 1.5 yards per play.
You don't need us to tell you the turnovers were the reason they lost, and the fact that they had as many interception return yards as Florida had passing yards was a big factor in that. But
and like Greg's favorite stat of all time,
right? I don't think any of us expected the defense to be this dominant when we looked at the matchup.
Absolutely.
How did they get it done? What was the key?
I don't know. I just don't know. Coming off a game where Furman puts up 32 points on you, I just don't understand how they make that complete turnaround. I mean, it was the best defensive performance of the season, without a doubt. Without a doubt.
Maybe after that Furman game, Muschamp got on Quinn, and something sparked Quinn to get those guys motivated, because, Furman game was embarrassing.
Yeah, and they did it without Dominic Easley, who, from, you know, some people's perspectives, is the best defensive lineman they have.
Well, from Dan Quinn's perspective, he's the best defensive lineman they have. He said he was, like, the biggest playmaker or something like that, and I tend to trust him more than my evaluation of the defensive lineman, but, I mean, certainly in some games you see Easley is effective, in some games you see he's not.
So you trust Dan Quinn's evaluation of the defensive line more than your own, but you trust your evaluation of the offensive line more than Muschamp's?
Yes, Muschamp's a known liar. Dan Quinn seems like a nice guy.
I just wanted to clear that up.
No, yeah, definitely. And things that are blatantly obvious, you don't even have to evaluate. You just know. But anyway, I think that the defense was great, and I think you've got to give credit to a lot of different people. Jelani Jenkins played a great game. Matt Elam's the best player on the defense, and we can talk about this for hours, I think, because Watts is not a big Matt Elam fan, but he broke up two passes.
I'm not a big Matt Elam as a person fan. He's a fine player.
You don't know Matt Elam.
Matt Elam seems like a nice guy. Like, he's like one of the guys on the team that I think is like a nice person away from football.
Right. And I think,
what about his tweet on Friday night saying that he didn't respect any of the senior speeches? That's not the type of thing you just blast out on Twitter if you're an honorable and respectable leader of a football
team.
It
is if you keep it real.
Real talk, hashtag.
Hashtag real talk, yeah. But, no, I mean, he was making, in terms of on-the-field football.
No, he's by far their best player.
Okay, I'm glad you came around.
Okay, but the point I want to make about this defense is, who do they lose next year? They don't lose anybody.
Right. They lose Josh Shaw.
Jay Howard.
Josh Shaw.
Moses Jenkins.
Josh Shaw and Moses Jenkins are departing.
Jay Howard is the only significant loss on that defense.
Willie Green.
Right.
You said significant.
Jay Howard is the only significant loss on that defense. So if the offense can just be serviceable next year, there should be a complete turnaround of this team. I don't see any way that they should lose six games next season with that defense.
Well, here's the concern that I would have to kind of counter your point here. And you lose Jay Howard, and the line is already shallow. So are there people coming in? You guys apparently know a lot more about the recruiting end of this than I do. Are there defensive tackles coming in that can fill this kind of void? Because if they don't have some freshmen, at least bodies that they can rotate
in
there.
They definitely need bodies. They definitely need bodies.
And I think, well, actually, I shouldn't have said that. I disagree that they just need bodies. There are players on the roster with DT next to their name who I guess they just aren't comfortable playing.
Tevin Westbrook.
In terms of, like, yeah, guys.
He was a true freshman. Like, that they got, like, toward the end of the recruiting cycle, they probably just wanted to build him up this year.
Right.
Because I feel like in high school he was a little undersized, and they probably wanted to bulk him up.
But there's guys, like, just off the top of my head, like Okine and Leon Orr, and guys who hardly play, and if you really just needed bodies, they would be in there. I mean, I feel like if they're depth is going to be a concern.
Right, they've only got five defensive tackles on the roster.
Well, read them off real quick.
You got Leon Orr, Jay Howard, who's gone, Omar Hunter, Sharif Floyd, and Dominic Easley.
And that's counting Sharif Floyd, is it? Right.
Right.
So, I mean, it is rough.
They definitely need, I mean, at the least, bodies that can rotate in. At the most, they definitely need more playmakers on the defensive line. All I'm saying is the arrow is, as Charlie Weiss likes to say, is the arrow is pointing drastically up for that defense.
That's fair, and I think
that secondary next year is going to be, I think it's going
to
be scary.
Well, that's one thing I wanted to talk about is because Jeremy Brown apparently missed the whole season from an injury that was supposed to be a couple weeks,
and he was supposed to be their best returning corner.
And then it was the next week, and then it was the next week. Is he? I mean, what did we remember about Jeremy Brown before this injury? Assuming, which is a dangerous assumption, that he can come back to full strength, do we think that he's also going to make this unit even better in terms of what's already a young and scary secondary?
He was their most experienced corner coming into the season.
Is that all he had going for him, though? Like, I thought he was pretty serviceable last year.
Yeah, I mean,
he was good at times and he was bad at times, but he was also...
He wasn't Moses Jenkins bad.
Last year.
Right. All right, I mean, it's fair to say that...
Like I said, I mean, it's all youth on that defense. So, I mean, they've only got Ascension ahead of them. They're not going to regress at this point.
You bring Matt Elam back, you bring Pop Saunders, who's been making plays, like, the last month after he got burnt several times.
And both those guys are versatile. They can slide down in the nickel.
Right.
Because you've got...
We talked about...
Recruits like Jabari Gorman and a couple other guys that didn't even get on the field this year.
We talked about Elam and how strong he is against the run. And have you guys seen something like that from Saunders, too? You kind of just said he was in the nickel and in that kind of a role.
He's not as good in the nickel as Elam is, but he's another option in that position to where when you've got Jeremy Brown returning, Cody Riggs, Marcus Roberson, Matt Elam, Pop Saunders, Josh Evans, you've got to find a spot for all these guys to play. Yeah. You know, you want to get those guys on the field. So I'm just saying that his versatility allows them to have multiple different looks in their secondary.
I feel like Elam's more of like that hard-hitting safety that's going to make the plays when you need to, while Pop Saunders is more of like the roaming guy that's going to find the ball a few times.
We've seen that late in the season he's come on in that area, and you don't know. It's tough when you want to judge based on interceptions. Because you don't know if it's just variance that, you know, he got two or three good plays and it just worked out that way, or if he's actually improving and becoming better as a ball-hawking type of free safety.
If you can have that kind of guy
in addition to what Elam gives you as an in-the-box player, that's pretty special.
That interception he had a few weeks ago where he, like, made that diving, jumping play in front of Alshon Jeffrey was...
That's what I'm saying is there's no question he's made some great plays, but just to do it consistently is something entirely different from if you just see a guy one play and think, hey, I'm going to go after this, and it works out.
Right. Back to the defensive line, they definitely need to get some players in there. They've only got three defensive linemen in their class right now.
Right.
One three-star Jafar man out of Stone Mountain, Georgia.
I follow him on Twitter. He's funny.
Yeah. And then you got Dante Phillips out of Venice, who's a four-star, 6'6", 270. Jafar man, 6'4", 275. And then Quintez Williams, a defensive end out of Tyron, Georgia, he's 6'4", 300. Mm-hmm. So he's that 3'4 type of end. So, I mean, you've got guys coming in, but I feel like they still need at least one to two to three, maybe even four more guys in that class on defensive line.
Well, here's one more thing we'll talk about. We need depth of defensive line, and when I say we mean, you know, Florida needs the depth of defensive line, and they need to find a way to recruit that and bring that in. But... we talked about the linebackers, and we kind of liked that group. You know, it's hard to argue with the production of Jenkins and Bostic, and we liked what we saw from Mike Taylor when he was in there. And Laurenti McCray has shown flashes. He's been injured lately, so it's been tough to kind of get a real gauge on that, but he's been good. And we just talked about the secondary and how strong they're going to be, but how are they going to rush the passer is still the problem that I have with this team, because Floyd's playing defensive end, and that's not going to work out long term. We've seen that. Ronald Powell is clearly bad, and we joked about how William Green's not significant, but at times he was one of the best pass rushers. They just
Who
are the pass rushers that were better than William Green?
They really missed out on Jadeveon Clowney. I feel like that would have been, you know, a humongous boost to any team, obviously. But
right.
They need that guy on the edge, for sure. That's what Florida has had. They had Jermaine Cunningham. They had Carlos Dunlap. They had Derek Harvey. Even though he didn't pan out in the NFL, he was great in college.
I had to make sure you shouted that one out.
Right. But they've also shown the ability to get pressure on the quarterback through scheme. John Bostic, I think, leads the team in sacks because he's been an effective blitzer out of zone blitzes. I mean, they're going to have to be more creative with that, and I feel like they can be, but they also need that guy on the defensive line that's getting pressure. I feel like another year in the weight program for Ronald Powell, another year in the weight program for
Hope for Ronald Powell.
You've got to hold out a little bit of hope. I don't want to. He hasn't shown anything to deserve that hope, but they've committed to him, and they don't have another guy. They've got to continue to work with him and see if he can't develop.
Tom, what's your stance on Ronald Powell and the pass rush in general?
You can't give up on him like one bad season like that, but I don't know if he's shown anything that makes us that should make us think that he's going to be great. At least serviceable. But I mean, he was just so bad this year.
He's the biggest problem with not having competition in practice, because Ronald Powell has this entitled "I'm the best" attitude. I mean, we've all seen it when we actually get to talk.
There's no way you can suck that much and still.
But there's no other option. You can't bench him for Willie Green. Like, really?
Right, but is that the only driving motivation for these guys, is not being benched? I like to think that they've got bigger.
They've got to, but I mean, until they show it, that's what you've got to assume, is that he does not have that motivation, he doesn't have that drive, or he just doesn't have the ability. It's one or the other.
I mean, yeah. I mean,
I got to think that he has the ability. It's just, I'm with you. It's the motivation. It's the drive. It's the not having anybody to push you in practice at that position. Like,
he comes to practice every day, and he knows he's the number one at defensive end. He knows that
they pumped him up so much in the preseason position, Ronald Powell, blah, 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 this. Like,
you got another Powell coming in, Jeremy Powell, linebacker.
When we talk about kind of he doesn't have anybody pushing him in practice, I think the coaches are probably still fucking pissed at him because he's terrible.
Oh, yeah, but I mean, like, what are they going to do? They're not going to bench him for, like Watt said, Willie Green.
He hasn't been out there as many snaps as you guys.
But he's still starting.
Right.
Like, there's been times when it's Willie Green and Sharif Floyd out there and Ronald Powell sitting on the bench. So they are
definitely
capable of. And just when you're the number one recruit, don't you eventually look up and say, wow, it's about to be my junior year and I have done nothing?
I would think so.
I feel like that should be enough. And if it's not, then that's a bigger
problem.
But
there's also a reason
behind him in practice.
I mean, I don't know if I really want to go here, but there's a reason why they got Ronald Powell from California, Sharif Floyd from Philadelphia, and Dominic Easley from Staten Island, New York. And it's not because they recruit really well.
Wait, what is it?
I mean, they recruit really well, but it's not because they're just really good at talking to the recruits. So there's probably another
reason. What are you
saying?
Watts is insinuating that there's something fishy going on with the fact that Florida got all three of those guys.
Of course, Watts thinks there's something.
Yeah, this is a conspiracy theory edition of the podcast.
Right. He's floating a lot of stuff out.
But I think a lot of what it was Meyer was really close with Ronald Powell. Like, Ronald Powell came here Friday Night Lights and stuff. I'm like, once that happened, like, they started talking. Like, they saw what Florida was doing. They thought that they could just walk in and, you know, like you wrote in your column last week, be really entitled. And they thought, oh, if the three of us come here together, man.
Right.
We're just going to wreck stuff.
Right, that's why they liken themselves to the Heat.
Yeah, like when Dominic Easley committed at the either Under Armour or Army game, I forgot which one it was, like, nobody thought he was going to pick Florida. He just got caught up in the moment and did it.
I mean,
I wouldn't rule out a conspiracy. I wouldn't rule out a conspiracy. I'm just saying that there's no evidence out there to make us think otherwise right now.
Right. I mean, with the point with all these guys, that it remains to be seen. But overall, I think we can agree with Mr. Watts that the arrow on the defense is definitely pointing up, and there are some signs to be encouraged about, which is rare from this team.
One more note on the secondary, like what we were talking about before about, you know, Pop being that, you know, kind of ball hawking safety. I think we've seen him come on more at the end of the season because I think they're starting to trust the corners more now. And when you trust the corners, you could take risks.
Okay.
Well, they've been playing man with the corners pretty much all year.
Yeah, but I mean, at the beginning, you have, you know, Marcus Roberson out there as a true freshman. Right. I mean, they don't have that chemistry at that point, but I feel like the more that they've played with each other, Pop's like, okay, I can trust him to do this, so I can take this risk, and I can try to make this play. Right.
That's another point with the young defense, is that maybe just by playing together, and it'll be the same guys out there next year, that they'll gel just on that alone, if nothing else. All right, we're kind of short on time this week, so we're going to weave our Gators in the NFL segment into our award segments. We have the Ahmad Black Award for Excellence in the Field of Sport and the Will Hill Awful Life Decision of the Week. We're going to end on a bad note, so we're going to start with the Ahmads. And, Tom, you can go first.
All right, my Ahmad, I'm going to start off with Drew Brees, 24 of 38 for 363 yards.
He played for
yards.
The Gators?
No, it's
don't
close
worry.
Enough.
I'm going to be weaving it in there. 363 yards passing, 4 touchdowns, and a rushing touchdown, and single-handedly won my fantasy football matchup in our Alligator League this week.
Which is pretty nice.
Yeah.
It's getting, yo, that league is tight.
Yeah, man.
I need all the wins we could get.
I need either you or Kyle to lose this week and me win to make the playoffs.
Man, that's not going to happen.
What am I, 8-4 in, like, fifth place?
Adrian Peterson's going to come back and y'all are done.
It's close, man. But while Drew Brees had, like, this ridiculous performance to lead the Saints, Tim Tebow, not so conventional, and still won for the Denver Broncos.
You got to get wins, man. Tebow's getting wins. We've talked a lot about Tebow. We don't need to get into that too much. But, I mean, he threw for 143 yards, pretty much all on the last drive in typical Tim Tebow fashion.
But he made those throws at the end of the game.
Yeah,
like he's been doing.
22 carries is the most, right, the most by a quarterback since the merger.
A long time. Yeah. And, I mean, only 67 yards, which is rare. Didn't get in the end zone that way, but I mean, he's just, they run the ball a lot, breaking news. And
He's the reason San Diego missed two field goals.
Willis McGahee deserves an honorary Ahmad, honestly.
Oh, yeah, that run.
Yeah, because he just does nothing but come up with clutch run after clutch run for that team and make Tim Tebow look good.
And Tebow's completing less than 50% of his passes. He's, you know, Von Miller gets an Ahmad, too. He's freaking great. Anyway, what's yours, Matt?
I got to go ahead and give it to David Nelson. He showed the ability to catch the ball in the Buffalo Bills' loss to the New York Jets and scored his fifth touchdown of the year, which is a career high.
He's making moves. He's become a reliable option, much more so than he ever was here, which is very strange to say, and you would think he would get worse at the next level, but I think Tom has something he wants to interject. Maybe we skipped over him too soon. What's going on?
I just got this email that I need to, like, add an honorary one there.
Really?
Yeah.
We've given out, like, 18 mods now. Continue, though.
Just got an email from Kerry Sally asking me if I wanted to cover the World Series of beer pong.
What the hell?
That's just kind of awesome, like, just to get an email about that.
Yeah, I can really set you up with the MVP of that league, actually.
Nice. We got connects here at the Alligator Sports Podcast.
Yeah, right. I think that's just, like, an awesome email to receive, like, just randomly.
Right.
I got that, too.
Woo. Yeah.
I hope I have one when I check later. Anyway, mine goes to Reggie Nelson, and I know Matt Watts is not a big fan of Reggie Nelson. He knows him better than I do, but he's gotten it done this year. He's a part of a great defense.
Gotten it done this year.
He has
year.
An interception. When I've watched him, he hasn't looked that bad, and he's made some tackles. I mean, what's wrong with Reggie Nelson, man? He had another pick this weekend.
I'm sure it was tipped to him or a defender handed it to him.
Dude, the eraser is back.
I didn't see the play. I don't know.
No, it's Reggie Nelson, guys. Like, honestly, I wish you could get a game tape of the Bengals or the Jaguars or
here's the thing. I want to know. We were talking about this the other day, and I think Brandon Lloyd. Maybe I wasn't even talking about you guys, this with you guys, but I think Brandon Lloyd is like the worst football player ever because he played bad for so long, and now he's had a couple good seasons, and everybody's all back on. But how come you can't get on board with Reggie Nelson when he plays bad for a while, and now he looks good?
He doesn't look good. That's the problem.
He does. He's a good football player.
Just because... No, he's not a good football player. You're not watching the football games if you say that Reggie Nelson is a good football player. Reggie Nelson is on a good defense.
How many Bengals games have you watched this year?
Two or three, actually. He's terrible.
when they played the Jaguars, and a couple other times when they played the Browns, and I watched them against the Steelers.
Yeah, you watched the Bengals. I want you to go.
We might even pause the podcast right now. I want you to go and look up look at the box scores and tell me how many times a touchdown of more than 25 yards has been given up against the Bengals this year. And I guarantee you every single one of them is Reggie Nelson's fault.
That's rough.
Jason Hill might be able to get a job next year in the NFL. And the only reason is because he caught a 73-yard touchdown against Reggie Nelson because Reggie Nelson bit on a double move. Because Reggie Nelson is a terrible football player.
I'm just going to chime in here. Watts is still hating on Reggie Nelson despite him making some plays, but Pop Saunders was getting burnt on like every touchdown pass that the Gators gave up at the beginning of the season, and we were just singing his praises 5 minutes ago.
There's certain guys who are risk-takers.
Saunders is a 19-year-old kid. Reggie Nelson is a 26-year-old man who's being paid to be a professional football player, which is something that he's not.
How do you know Pop Saunders isn't getting paid?
Whoa.
Conspiracy theory over here, but... Jesus.
I can admit, I watched the Bengals when they played the Steelers, and I thought he looked fine, but that's just me.
Just go back and watch him play patty cake with Reggie Wayne and then tell me that Reggie Nelson is a good football player. I'm sorry. Just watch it.
He plays
patty cake for 20 yards as Reggie Wayne pushes his 150-pound, diminutive, puny, like, soft frame out of the way and scores touchdowns.
Nah, you know what?
That's Reggie Nelson.
I put a lot of stock in what you're saying because you know better than I do, but I have a little bit of faith. So.
I thought we were going to keep this short.
Anyway, yeah, let's move on to the Wills. Tom, would you start us off?
I'm giving my will to Percy Harvin.
You know, which seems weird because he had an awesome game, but I'll let you explain.
But he had a 104-yard kick return and didn't score.
Right.
Like, how do you go more than 100 yards and not score? You get tackled in those last two or three yards.
The max is 108.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he is close. I mean, you can't let some dude chase you down. You just can't let it happen.
Especially when you're as fast as Percy is.
Especially when you know Toby Gerhart might not score because he's terrible. Talk about people letting fantasy teams down. But anyway, I mean, no, we got to talk about overall in that game. He had eight catches for 95 yards and a score. Yeah. And he
probably his best game of the season.
Had five carries for 11 yards, which isn't a great showing, but the fact that they're even giving him the ball that way is they're using Percy Harvin the way people who are Florida fans and watched him here would think that an NFL team should use Percy Harvin, so yay on Percy for that.
But he still won 104 yards and didn't score.
And he still gets a Will Hill.
Yeah.
Watts, what's yours for this week?
It's got to go to Stevie Johnson, who must be blaming God again for dropping three catches.
That he really shot himself in the foot there.
Right. Yikes.
Right. He definitely shot himself in the foot after he made a celebration dance earlier in the game after catching a touchdown, mocking Plaxico Burress by shooting himself in the leg with a fake little gun in his hand.
Did you guys have a problem with that?
Then he mocks Antonio Holmes doing the jet and falls down like the jet's crashing. Yes. It was the most awesome
celebration I've ever seen.
Right. It would be great had it been in the fourth quarter for them to go up by three scores or two scores and the game is out of reach. But when you do that in the first quarter against a team like the Jets that has the talent to come back and make you look like a fool at the end of the game, then yeah, it's a problem.
I guess.
And then when you drop a wide open pass down the seam in the fourth quarter when your team's driving to try and win the game, and then you drop a ball in the end zone and you drop another ball in the end zone, yeah, it's a mistake.
Here's the one thing I'll say, and this was not my first reaction was that it was awesome and I loved it and I thought it was hilarious, but. Then I was listening to the ESPN does an NFL podcast. I was listening to that, and the guy said, basically, Stevie Johnson throughout his career has done extremely well against Darrelle Revis, and he's going to be a free agent at the end of this season. But instead of talking about how he's a Revis killer and a great wide receiver, we're talking about drops and stupid celebrations.
Exactly.
So, bad move on Stevie Johnson for taking the focus off being good at football.
It wasn't a stupid
and
celebration.
Putting it on
it was
everything
awesome.
Else, but
like, name like three celebrations you've seen that are better than that.
There's none. It's hilarious.
The thing is, the perception around his peers and around the league is not good for that.
Right. It's Sean like disrespectful.
Merriman. Yeah. Sean Merriman tweeted during the game.
The game to say that it was disrespectful.
His own teammate.
On the Bills.
That's hilarious.
I don't know how we do this, but yeah.
It's great. Anyway, mine goes to Rex Grossman, and this is continuing the trend of talking about people who did well, but we're going to hate on him anyway. Rex Grossman had another fine game, and since he's taken over at the Redskins job, he's been doing all right. He is 26 of 35 for 314 yards, and 2 touchdowns. But the thing is, he also threw 2 interceptions, and I believe he lost a fumble. And I think when you are a football team and you start Rex Grossman, you're basically saying whether we win or lose depends pretty much entirely on what Rex Grossman. And I'm just not willing. I would not be willing to do that as a football coach.
It's one of those, like, what else are you going to do? Play John Beck? They tried that. It didn't work.
High risk, high reward thing.
I would rather play John Beck, honestly, because it's like, the way John Beck isn't going to... John Beck is not good at football, and he's scared to make throws.
John
down
Beck
the field.
Will never win you a football game, though. Right. When John Beck's your quarterback, game. You have to rely on everybody else.
Right. That's. I would rather do that.
But
than
Washington
just say,
doesn't have the players
Rex
to
Grossman.
Do that.
Right. Washington doesn't have the personnel to win play to win games with everybody else. With Rex Grossman as their quarterback, they can win a game with just Rex Grossman.
He's a gunslinger, man.
He's just a lotto ticket, is basically.
Right,
and
exactly.
I could never, ever be a
lotto ticket. A lotto ticket that explodes if you don't win.
Which is why you're totally against the Suck for Luck campaign.
Which is, I'm just saying, I could never have be anywhere near a team that would want to start Rex Grossman and basically put that much of an emphasis on what he wants to do in a game and just say, if we're going to be good, it's because of him. If we're going to be bad, it's because of him. And we're going to he's the franchise at that point, basically.
Fair.
You know the Jags are going to have a better chance than Andrew Luck than the Dolphins
really
are now
scared.
Because of you.
I'm not worried about Andrew Luck. You guys know who Matt Barkley is?
Yeah, he's a
familiar?
Kid that's going to return for his senior season.
Are you
season.
Familiar with Robert Griffin? Have you seen Landry Jones? I don't like him as much, but... Anyway, the point remains, there's other guys that are out there. And obviously Luck is the best, and that'd be awesome, but it's just not going to happen, and we have to move on. But anyway... I guess that about wraps up the show for this week, finally. We had a lot of stuff to talk about with all the Meyer and all the, you know, there was a football game against FSU, I guess we had to talk about. And we'll be back when we figure out what's up with the bowl situation, and we'll be able to preview that eventually. Until then, I think we're going to come at you with some hoop stuff. And
ball sports extravaganza.
We have a recruiting podcast that's long overdue that I tried to get worked out earlier about the time we did the small sports extravaganza, and it never came together because of scheduling conflicts and whatnot, but...
I'd like to see Kelly and Broholt in here
right?
for the recruiting.
I think we can do pretty good with that.
Yeah.
So I will talk to them and we'll see what we can do. But we're probably not going to do another football one for a little while because we just talked everything to death. If there's some big news that comes out,
when DJ Durkin and Mickey Marotti leave, we'll be back here.
Right. But until then, you can find us at Alligator Sports. You can find me at Greg Luca. You can find Watts. You want to go first this time or you just start with Tom, but you're ready to go?
At Watt Matts, WATTMATTS.
And Tom, where can we find you?
At TOMAS_VERDE.
And you could like us on Facebook at facebook.com/alligatorpodcast. You could send any feedback to podcast@alligator.org telling us to make shorter shows so it takes up less of your life. that is all we have, right? We covered everything. We've covered literally everything. But so yeah, we'll see you when we see you. And until then, thanks for listening.
I mean, grind.